The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 9, text number 10. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on June 16th, 2011, in Klang, Malaysia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Maya Dakshina Prakriti. Suyate Sacharacharam He tu nanena konteya Jagadvi parivartate Maya dakshena prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam He tu nanena konteya Jagadvi parivartate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So there's any questions, you should write them down during the lecture, and then it should be written on a paper and then passed up. That's how the question, I will take questions in writing at the end. Not verbally, but in writing. Translation and purport. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O Son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. I say, you repeat, this material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O Son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. It is clearly stated here that the Supreme Lord, although aloof from all the activities of the material world, remains the Supreme Director. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Will in the background of this material manifestation. But the management is being conducted by a material nature. Krishna also states in Bhagavad Gita that of all the living entities in different forms and species, I am the Father. The Father gives seeds to the womb of the mother for the child. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, by His mere glance, injects all the living entities into the womb of material nature. And they come out in their different forms and species according to their last desires and activities. All these living entities, although born under the glance of the Supreme Lord, take their different bodies according to their past deeds and desires. So the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. He simply glances over material nature. Material nature is thus activated and everything is created immediately. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord, but he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrant flower before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person. Yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There is a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, he has nothing to do with this material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot do anything. Yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. Vandeham. Shri Guru Shri Jata Bala Kamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajiva. Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha So, do you want to be happy?
Yes.
Nandamayo Vyasat. That is the nature of the living being. That is the nature of God, because you are part and parcel of God. Therefore, your nature also is to be full of bliss. But now are you full of bliss? No. We are suffering in this material existence. Every day we suffer in so many ways, isn't it? This is because we have become disconnected from our actual nature. In other words, bliss is natural and misery is unnatural. So you are feeling so many anxieties every day because you are in an unnatural state of consciousness. And what is that unnatural state? You are misidentifying yourself with a lump of flesh and blood, a gross lump of flesh, blood, urine, stool, mucus, and pus. And you're thinking, this is me. You understand? As long as you continue to identify with your material body, there is no way that you can find true lasting happiness. I don't care how wealthy you may become. Even if you're the wealthiest man in the world, all the way to the post of Brahmaji. I don't care how powerful you are, how famous you are, how healthy you are, how intelligent you are. I don't care what your position. As long as you continue to misidentify yourself with this gross lump of earth, water, fire, air, and ether, you're cutting your own throat. That's it. You're simply cutting your own throat. False happiness, maya sukaya. So do not be a victim of false happiness. This is what the great acharyas are telling us. Mahajano yena gatastapanta. You must follow the pathway of the great acharyas. Svayambhur nadada shambhu kumaro kapilo manu prilado janako bhishmo balirvayasakirvayam. These are the 12 great Mahajanas. Svayambhur, that is Brahmaji. Svayambhur, Narad Muni, Shambhu, Shiva, Kumara, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila Dev, Kumara Kapila Manu, Svayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhishma, Bali Maharaj, Srila Vyasa Dev, and Yamaraj. These are the great Mahajanas. If you do not follow the Mahajana mark, which mark will you follow? Do you know which mark you will follow if you don't follow the Acharya mark? You will follow the Rakshasa mark, the Ravanas, the Hiranyakasipus, you see, who are ruling the world now, you see. It's Ravana, Hiranyakasipu class, who are considered the leaders, the big cricket players, the rock musicians, the politicians, these are the people leading the world. The big mundane scholars, speculators, scientists. This light is a famous news service called CNN. And it was published yesterday on CNN that the universe is 13.7 billion years old. People take this as gospel. The scientists say that the universe is 13.7 billion years. And how many years are they off? Do you realize how far they were off in their calculation? They were actually 155 trillion, 6.3 billion years off in their calculation. They say 13.7 billion. Actually, it's 155 trillion, 20 billion years ago the universe came out of Mahavishnu's exhalation. These scientists are really, really off the track. I mean, I can understand a little margin of error, okay? Maybe, you know, a couple of billion years plus or minus. But 155 trillion years off? That is such a gross mistake. Why should we take them as our leaders? I can't understand. Why we should take these scientists as our leaders? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Why we should take these scientists, these politicians, the movie stars, the rock stars, the cricket stars, the soccer stars. Why we should take these big scholars? Why we should take these people as our leaders? It doesn't make sense. I just don't understand why we do this. Why are we so stupid to follow these so-called leaders? It doesn't make sense. We have to hear from great acharyas. The great acharyas means the 12 Mahajanas and those who are strictly following the 12 Mahajanas. These are great acharyas. We have to hear from the great acharyas, like Srila Prabhupada, and those who are strictly following Srila Prabhupada. It's not that just having some title and position makes one an authority. No. You don't become an authority by a title and a position. One becomes a spiritual authority by strictly following the Acharya Marg. That's how they become authority. It's like the GBC has a process for approving gurus. They don't rubber stamp anybody as a spiritual master. All they say is, we have no objection if this person tries to be a guru. They don't certify anybody as a bona fide. The GBC never certifies anybody as a bona fide spiritual master. That person has to prove it by his own qualities. You can't be stamped bona fide guru. You see, you cannot be stamped. It cannot be rubber stamped. That has to be established by the qualities. Baba says the guru is self-effulgent. You cannot rubber stamp, appoint someone as a guru. A guru means someone who has the qualities of a guru. You don't get that by being voted in. Well, we vote you as having the qualities of a guru. No. You become guru by manifesting the qualities of guru. Well, that's described in the Mundaka Upanishad. Shrotiyam Brahmanishtam. These are the qualities. He has heard from the Shruti. He has heard the authoritative Vedic wisdom coming into siblic succession. And Brahmanishtam, he is fixed in Krishna consciousness. How much fixed? Well, 1 hour a week? No. He's fixed 24 hours a day in Krishna consciousness. In his waking, in his sleep even, he's fixed in Krishna consciousness. In his waking, his sleeping, 24 hours a day, in all times, in all places, he's fixed in Krishna consciousness. That's how we understand a bona fide spiritual master. So we have to follow the bona fide spiritual master. He is purely representing the previous acharyas. That's why he's a bona fide spiritual master. If we hear from such a person who is pure in Krishna consciousness and we take those words deeply into our hearts, then we become purified. That's the process. You can be sinful rascal number one. You can be the most sinful jagai and madai in the face of this planet, a drunkard, a woman hunter, an alcoholic, a marijuana smoker. You can be the most degraded meat eater, anything. The Vedas say even if you're a dog eater, you can become a bona fide spiritual master. Doesn't matter how sinful you may be, but if you will hear from a pure devotee and you will take those words deeply into your heart and you will surrender yourself fully, not taking the guru as a pet, but you become the sold out servant of your spiritual master, and then you become empowered to preach on behalf of the great acharyas and do the greatest good for the human society. See? To actually bring people to Krishna consciousness. To actually pull people out of the suffering of material existence. To actually awaken them to their eternal identities as spirit souls, qualitatively one with God. So this is our Krishna consciousness movement. It's not that if some ISKCON leader falls down that the movement is finished. No. This movement is very, very powerful. We have Prabhupada Shakti behind this movement. He's the most powerful acharya in the history. The only Vaishnava acharya who was able to spread Krishna Bhakti all over the planet. You see, we have Prabhupada Shakti directly. We have that direct connection with Prabhupada. He's our founder acharya. We have the most powerful acharya, the most powerful Vaishnava acharya in the history of the world, directly blessing us with all his mercy, his potency for making this movement a success. So it doesn't matter if somebody falls down. It doesn't mean our movement is finished. Just like in the war, there's a big battle going on. Do all the soldiers survive? No. Many soldiers are killed in the battle. Do you have... If some of your leaders are killed in the war, does that mean you lose the war? No. In every battle, leaders, the common soldiers are killed, leaders are killed. It's a normal thing in every war. So some of our leaders fall down, does that mean our movement? No, we're not destroyed. If we maintain that determination to be Krishna conscious and spread Krishna consciousness, even if our leaders fall down, you know what Prabhupada said? He said, because my books are distributed, even if you all leave this movement, it will still go on. If you all leave, my movement will still go on because my books have been so widely distributed. Even if everybody blew, if all the GBCs fell down, if all the gurus left, even if everybody left and you're the last one on the planet, and you have Prabhupada's books and you have full faith in Prabhupada, then you can revolutionize this planet. Even if everybody leaves, They all left. They all fell in. Either they went back to Godhead or they all fell into Maya. And you're the last one left on the planet Earth, the last ISKCON devotee. You see, you're the only ISKCON devotee on the whole planet. They all either went back to Godhead or they all fell into Maya, you see. And you're the only ISKCON devotee left. If you have complete faith in Prabhupada's books, you fully surrender to the instructions your spiritual master has given you, you see, then you will be empowered to make this planet Krishna conscious. So we shouldn't let any fall down of any leader discourage us. We should just think, well, now I have to become more strong. This leader fell down, just see how powerful is Maya. Sometimes people wonder, well, how Lord Brahma could fall down? He's a pure devotee. Lord Brahma had some fall downs described. Prabhupada said, that is simply a lesson that we, how careful we have to be, how powerful is the material energy. We have to be very, very careful. Becoming a big leader doesn't protect you from the material energy. One has to be very humble. You know how to be always protected? Prabhupada told us in Boston. He said, I'm always praying to Krishna that I will not fall down. And one of the devotees, he said, that's why Prabhupada will never fall down. Because he's always praying that he won't fall down. The point is, a pure devotee is humble. He feels, I can fall down at any moment. Oh, I'm so advanced, I can do anything. No, I'm advanced devotee. No. The more you become advanced, the more you feel that you, how dangerous this material world is. The more you feel it's dangerous. And the more you're begging for protection. See, a neophyte thinks, yeah, I'm a big advanced devotee, you know. I can do whatever I want because I'm advanced. The neophyte thinks that way. And the more you become advanced, the more you think, oh, I'm very weak. And the material energy is very powerful. Krishna, please protect me. Please protect me. Please, Krishna, protect me. That's when you become advanced. When you realize how weak and feeble you are in the face of the material energy. That's when you really become advanced. And you're always begging, Krishna, please, I'm so weak. I'm so fallen. I'm so stupid. Please help me. The other day, I had some communication with one of my senior sannyasi godbrothers. And he said, he overlooked something, and I said, I'd like to talk with you on the phone, so please give me your phone number and the best time to call. So he sent me back his phone number. He didn't tell me the best time to call. Or it was the other way around. He gave me the best time to call. He didn't give me the phone number, one of the two. Then I emailed him back and said, well, you told me the best time to call, but you didn't give me the number. And he said, oh, I'm so stupid. Immediately he said, I'm so stupid. And he's a big, big advanced sannyasi with so many disciples all over the world. Immediately told me, oh, I'm so stupid. So that humility, you see, that willingness to take a humble position and admit one's weakness, you see, that's actually our strength. To admit our own weakness. To agree to be, to have my faults pointed out, you see. If nobody can correct me, you see, then I'm in a very dangerous position. But if I can be corrected, if I'm humble, I can be corrected by guru and by senior devotees, then I'm in a very strong position. So never think you're so advanced that you can't be corrected. If you feel it that way, you're in a very dangerous position. If you think you cannot be corrected, you can fall down at any minute, I guarantee you. The humble devotee always knows I can be corrected. I can be told, I can be corrected in every way. My attitude, my speech, my actions. I completely have to be open for being corrected in any way by any of the senior devotees. So in this way, we have to learn the art of how to become Krishna conscious. Lower than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, when will my mind attain this quality? Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays. See, he's begging. Respectful to all, not expecting their honor, then I will taste the name's nectar sublime. When will that day be mine? Kabbe habbe bolu seti nama. Bhaktivinoda is hankering. When will I stop being such a puffed up rascal? such a demon, and actually learn how to become humble. He's hankering, someday, I hope somehow or other, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, I will stop being such an asura and actually become a devotee. He's praying that way. Bhaktivinoda Thakura, a pure devotee, you see, he's showing us how we should pray. And we have to be very humble. Think, I'm the most abominable, wretched demon. Krishna, please save me. You see, that's the mood. That's how you become strong in Krishna consciousness. That's how you become a spiritual Maharati. You see. Some people say, well, you know, I don't want to be too humble because then I'll have low self-esteem. If you want to be successful in this world, you have to have high self-esteem. I've heard that argument many times. But you know, it's not really the correct understanding. Even Lord Jesus in the Bible states, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. In other words, the more you become humble, the more you become powerful. That's the thing. The more you become humble, the more you become powerful. Look how humble was Hanuman. Who could be more humble? Servant of Lord Ram than Hanuman. So humble. But see how powerful he was when he was facing Ravana? You see? The more you become humble for your spiritual master, the more you become powerful in facing this material energy. That's a fact. The more you become powerful. What did Prabhupada say in Africa? He said, I act like a king because nobody can defeat me. That's a fact. Prabhupada was just like an aristocrat. He was like aristocratic. He was so humble, but at the same time, he was so powerful. Actually, Prabhupada told us to become powerful. Digvijay Pandit, he said. You know what Digvijay means? One who conquers in all directions. So he said that you should go village to village, city to city, town to town, and make Digvijay. That there is God. I can prove there is God. Who are you who say there is no God? Come on. That is Digvijay. In this way, Prabhupada is teaching us how to become very, very powerful. So the more you become humble, the more you become powerful. Don't buy into this argument that humility destroys your, makes you an impotent eunuch who cannot be successful. That's not true. The more you become humble, the more you become powerful for spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. That's a fact. So try to develop this humility. Thinking yourself lower than the straw in the street, being more tolerant than a tree, offering all respect to everyone else without expecting even one little pinch of respect for yourself. We think, well, I'll be respectful to the devotees. As long as they're respectful to me, then it's okay. But I'll tell you honestly, I have some godbrothers who are very offensive to me. Very, very offensive. I'll be honest. But I love them and I respect them in spite of it. And they, whether they ever respect me in back, I don't care. I don't care whether... I have godbrothers that I love and respect them deeply. And even though they're very offensive towards me, that's all right. I figure it's for my purification. I figure it's my own contamination and they're blessing me by being very critical and heavy with me in the way they deal with me. I take it as a blessing. So this is how we develop humility. Even if somebody is offensive like anything to you, they're always rude, they're disrespectful, still you should respect them. Then you become very powerful. You become very powerful devotee, very powerful preacher. Maya will never be, you'll never fall down. Never fall down. One of my godbrothers in the GBC, he told the GBCs, he said that Sankarshan Das will never fall down. But I can tell you, I don't take it as a rubber stamp. Oh, I can do anything. So tomorrow Krishna Goswami said, I'll never fall down. He told him, so I'll do whatever I want. You know, I can eat sweets till midnight. You know, I can go here, go there. I know, and everything. Because it's been said that I will never fall down by an advanced devotee. You know? I think that I'm in danger of falling down at every minute, and I have to always beg Prabhupada to protect me. That's why I won't fall down. You see? Because I know I'm vulnerable. As long as you have a material body, the material sense objects are always there. So because I'm always begging Prabhupada to protect me from Maya, that's why I will never fall down. Not because I was rubber stamped and somebody will never fall down. See? So anyway, I was asked to speak about Lord Jagannath. And I would like to give you a little hint or a little tidbit of the nectar that Prabhupada shared with me the first time I was with him and he gave a lecture. It happened to be at the Ratha Yatra Festival in San Francisco. And Prabhupada gave us a little glimpse into the esoteric nature of Ratha Yatra. We normally take Ratha Yatra as a big public festival, you know, chanting and dancing, bishad distribution. It's wonderful. That's the exoteric or external aspect of Ratha Yatra, but there's an internal aspect that the advanced devotees meditate on deeply within their hearts during the festival. Has anybody ever told you the internal meaning of Ratha Yatra? No one's ever told you the internal meaning of Ratha Yatra? Prabhupada told us. It's very nice. So, you know, Krishna, he grew up in Vrindavan. And the Brijavasis, they were madly in love with Krishna. Everyone, take that out of your mouth. It's very dirty. Get the pen out of your mouth. Never put anything on your mouth except prasadam. Anything you touch to your mouth is muchi. It's like stool. It's a very dirty thing. So, everyone was madly in love with Krishna. Everyone was just completely, totally absorbed in thinking about Krishna, seeing Krishna, talking to Krishna, playing with Krishna, dancing with Krishna, eating with Krishna, doing so many things. Everyone was just completely in total ecstasy, constantly associating with Krishna. Everybody, even the animals, even the butterflies, even the trees, even the flowers, even the rocks, everybody was in complete ecstasy having with Krishna being present in Vrindavan. So when Krishna left Vrindavan, it became like a ghost town. I mean, people were just like, it was like a mental hospital or something. People had just gone crazy. People went crazy. They couldn't function anymore. The whole community became dysfunctional, in complete, total anxiety. So anyway, Krishna was now in Dwarka. The coward boy is now Prince Krishna, you see. He's a prince. He went from a coward boy to be a kshatriya. But there was a solar eclipse. And on the occasion of the solar eclipse, the Dwargavasis and the Brijavasis got together at Kurukshetra. You know that? The Brajavasis and the Dwarkavasis, they came together, they had a big reunion at Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra was a holy place. So they came to this holy place, Kurukshetra, for a reunion on the occasion of the solar eclipse. And you can imagine what the gopis were feeling. Oh, they're seeing Krishna. Oh, they were so happy to see Krishna, but they say, oh, it's so nice to see Krishna, but that's not really Krishna. That's not our Krishna. That's not Krishna. It's not really Krishna. That's not a coward boy. That's not our Krishna. So they were happy, but yet they were very sad and disappointed. That's not Krishna. That's not really Krishna. It's Krishna, but it's not really Krishna. It's not our Krishna. They were frustrated. So within their hearts, they were simply hankering. They wanted to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. They wanted to take this Krishna and pull him back to Vrindavan. Just grab, take him and force him. By force, we want to drag him back to Vrindavan so we can have him there again, you see. They were hankering in their hearts to bring Krishna. We must bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. We must bring Krishna. Because Mother Yashoda is practically dead. Nanda Maharaj is practically leaving his body. Radharani is completely ruined and devastated. We must save Nanda Maharaj. We must save Mother Yashoda. We must save Radharani. We must bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. In this way, their hearts were hankering like anything. So the Ratha Yatra festival actually is bringing Krishna along with his brother and sister back to Vrindavan. When you pull that rope, you can meditate. The Brijabasis are completely devastated, practically leaving their bodies in Krishna's separation. We must save the Brijabasis. We must bring Krishna back to Vrindavan so the Brijabasis will come to life again. This is the internal meeting. When you're pulling that rope, you can meditate and bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. So this is the internal meaning of Ratha Yatra that Prabhupada told us about. Right before the parade began back in 1971. He just mentioned it in a few lines, but I expanded on it a little bit from what we've heard. So anyway, you can pass the questions forward now. And if there's no questions, we can leave. Okay. Here's the question. Okay, very good. All right, question number one. Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisances, Srila Gurudev. My humble question is one. If we are pure spirit soul, how to understand we fell down from the spiritual world? Prabhupada explained very simply, it is simply a misuse of independence. Krishna gives us free will because if we don't have free will, what are we? Robots. Let's say one of you young men, you say your parents said, okay, Jay, we have a nice wife picked out for you. She'll never complain. She always smiles, and she won't eat anything. It'd be very cheap to keep, and she's a robot. We'd like to marry a robot, is it? Oh, well, some ladies, we give you a robot husband. You see, would you like a robot? Would you like to have a relationship? You can't have a relationship with a robot. There's no rasa with a robot. It's just a machine. So if we didn't have free will, we would simply be machines. That's a robot. So Krishna, he is Rasa Raj. He is the king of rasa. Because he has so many rasas with all of his devotees. Millions and billions of rasas. That's why he is Rasa Raj. So he doesn't want robots. He wants devotees who have free will. So if you have a free will, what does that mean? You can choose to love Krishna or to leave Krishna. You understand? Unless you have to have free will in order for there to be love, loving relationship. You can't have a loving relationship with a robot, with a machine. But you can have a loving relationship with a person who has the choice to love you or not to love you. So Krishna has given the living entities this choice to love me or leave me. Most of them love him. But a few of them make a foolish mistake. Just like little Anil. You heard the story of little Anil? His parents always warned him. They had a gas stove in the kitchen. Little Anil, whatever you do, don't touch the fire. It'll burn. But little Anil looked at that fire and it looked so beautiful. Wow. That blue flame up there, wow. I think, why do the parents tell me not to do that? It's just trying to deny me some pleasure. Why do they say, don't touch? So one day when his mother went away, he stuck his finger up there. He burned himself. Now if you ask him to stick it in again, will he do it again? No way. So he learned. The other children, they took their parents' word, they didn't do it. But this one was a little. He was curious to stick his hand in the fire. So now do you know who you are? You're one of the jivas that stuck his hand in the fire. Most of them do not. But those of us here in this material world, we stuck our hands in the fire. Krishna said, just be my devotee. Don't ever think of leaving me, and you'll be eternally blissful. And you know, well, maybe there's something better than being Krishna's devotee. Why don't I try being Krishna? He says, all right, you go ahead and try it. When you're burned out, come back and be my devotee again. So now, you see, now we got burned out here in this material world, so now we're coming back, you see. So that's the answer. Can a meat eater chant Hare Krishna mantra with a bead bag? Please wash your hand after you ate the meat. Yeah, it's all right. If they keep chanting, they'll give up their meat. Make sure to wash your hand before you touch the bead bag. You don't want blood on your bead bag. This meat eating is so gross. We were at the grocery store a couple of years ago, and somebody had a big piece of meat, cow flesh. It was dripping blood on the floor. They had to come and mop it up, the blood off the floor, and they'd take it home to eat it. I mean, it's so gross. I couldn't believe it. You know, this is a human being? That's a gross, nasty thing. I mean, I can understand a vulture eating it, you know what I mean? But a human being eating such a gross, disgusting thing? Little children don't like to eat meat, you know that? They had to be induced to eat by their parents and develop a taste. Meat is not a natural taste for any human being. A little child is not attracted to meat. It's a very unnatural thing for a human being to eat. Only by conditioning the people do it. Okay. All right. Can there be competition and jealousy in Krishna consciousness? Well, I have an interesting story in this connection, because I was extremely envious of my godbrothers who got Prabhupada's association. Because I was in a little remote temple. Prabhupada even wrote me one time that he could come to our temple, but our temple president was afraid to invite him because he was afraid he'd make an offense. Prabhupada wrote me saying he was willing to come to our temple, but our temple president said no. Oh my goodness. So I was telling you, I was really envious of those godbrothers. Sometimes godbrothers, see, I was with Prabhupada on the morning walk, and he turned to me, and he looked at me like this, and he said this. And I was in the darshan with him, and I was just like, wow, this is too much. All these devotees, my godbrothers, they with Prabhupada here, they saw him there, they spoke with him here, but what about me? What about me? When am I going to get my chance? I was so envious of my godbrothers, you know, getting this. So I said, well, you're not supposed to be envious. I mean, that's a material thing, you know. So I felt really guilty. Here I'm so envious of my godbrothers. So I wrote Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I'm so envious of my godbrothers who get in your association. What can I do to get free of this envy? I wanted Prabhupada to tell me how to get free of the envy. You know, he really surprised me when he wrote me back. He didn't tell me to get rid of the envy. He did not tell me. He said, spiritual envy means when you see somebody else as being recognized more than you are, then you should try harder so Krishna will recognize you also. He didn't say stop being envious, you puffed up brahmachari. No, he said, now you try harder so Krishna will notice you also. In other words, I'm noticing these are my disciples who are rendering very nice service to me. Now you try harder, so I'll also. You understand? So there is such a thing as spiritual jealousy. But you never do it to put another devotee down. Spiritual jealousy never means you always appreciate this great devotee. But I want to do better. I want to do better than he did. This devotee did 100 books. What a great accomplishment. He went out and did, but I want to do 200. You see? That's spiritual envy. This devotee went open a Namahat. He made 50 new devotees in 1 year. I want to be able to make 100 devotees in a year. You see? That's called spiritual envy. And that Prabhupada encouraged them. And that letter he wrote me encouraged them. You try harder so Krishna will recognize you also. So there's nothing wrong with that kind of jealousy in competition. But if it's cutthroat competition, where you're going to put the other person down, you see. And that's mundane competition. And that's bad. When you worship and love the other devotees and appreciate their great qualities, but you want to also become recognized by Krishna, then that's spiritual competition. Okay. What happens to those devotees who cause another devotee to fall just because of pure jealousy? Nobody can cause another devotee to fall. If you fall, you can't say, this devotee made me fall. That's called a cop-out. You're cheating. No, you fell because of your own lack of Krishna consciousness. You cannot say, this devotee made me fall. If you fell, it's your nonsense. If you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you got to take the responsibility for yourself. You can't blame your position on others. You got to take full responsibility for yourself if you want to become strong in Krishna consciousness. You see? So if you fell, it's your lack of Krishna consciousness. You can't blame it on anybody else. That's a thing. All right. But if you take shelter of advanced devotees, you'll never fall down. That's it. Okay. That's it. There's no more questions. So that means it's time for us to go. Unless somebody passes some more questions forward, we're going to go back to Kuala Lumpur. If you have any questions, now's your chance. Pass them forward. So there's no question. Oh, here's the question. As far as Jagannath's manifestation, of course, that's a very interesting story. There's the esoteric and the exoteric understandings. One is that Maharaj Indradumna commissioned the brahmana or the artisan to make the deities. But he couldn't wait until he was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. He became so impatient. He was told, don't come in, don't interrupt me. If you come in, I won't go any further. But one day he just couldn't tolerate it anymore. He went barking in to the, and then the artisan stopped at this point with the deities that were apparently not completely finished. That's the exoteric understanding. The esoteric understanding is that in Dwarka, there was some conversation, there was some Vrindavan Leela being discussed by, was it Rohini and who else? Huh? Rohini and Devaki were talking about Vrindavan Leela in Dwarka. They were having a Vrindavan Leela katha session in Dwarka. And who was the first one who came? Subhadra? Krishna? Krishna came and he was listening in to Vrindavan Leela, and Krishna is not that the gopis were only ones feeling separation. Krishna was also feeling intense separation from the gopis, you see. And so Krishna went into a state of he went into bhava, a type of bhava where his eyes became very big, his arms shrunk into his body. He was like, it's like we see Lord Jagannath. It's Krishna. Krishna went into a state of ecstasy where his limbs drew in and his eyes became very big and he was just like completely in a state of ecstasy hearing the Vrindavan Leela. And then was it who came next? Balaram? And Balaram came along. What's going on here? I've never seen Krishna look like this before. So what's going on? He was listening in, and also he also went into ecstasy. And then Subhadra came along. So actually, it's Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra going into ecstasy, hearing about Vrindavan. It's a pastime that happened in Dwarka. They went into Vrindavan ecstasy. Braj Ras. They were tasting the sweet mellows of Brajadam, Brajalila, while they were in Dwarka, and that's why they have said they look so different. They've just like Lord Chaitanya would go into ecstatic trances where his body become transformed. So Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra also did them. They became transformed by the wonderful pastimes of Krishna and the gopis in Vrindavan. Okay, so we'll stop here. And we thank you all very much for your coming here. We understand the temple is a little down now. Now it's time to bring new life into the temple. And the next time I come, I want to see this place packed all the way to the back. Hare Krishna. So preach up a storm. Don't be discouraged. Srila Prabhupada is with you. He'll give you, bless you, and empower you. And thank you, Hare Krishna.